Welcome, everybody, to the Stone On Sports Podcast. My name is Matt. Happy to be here with you. We've got a great show lined up for you today. As always, I'm joined by these two gentlemen here, Kyle and Ramey. Ramey, how's it going, brother?
It's going well. How about you? Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, not too bad, man. Not too bad. It's decently nice here. The Tigers got their dicks knocked in the dirt playing against the Nationals, which is absolutely inexcusable, yet entirely unsurprising.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat with the Cubs. They've been on a terrible, terrible run lately. They did win one yesterday, but they've lost more than they've won lately, and their season's kind of going down the tubes.
Didn't they beat Philadelphia earlier? Or they were up like eight.
Yesterday, eight Kyle. That's I know. Yesterday.
Well, I think they also won this afternoon.
So baseball, they play every day.
Right. But I also think they won this afternoon.
They got beat 2-1 today.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoot.
Shoot. Yeah.
How are you, Kyle?
Washington had 18 hits against the Tigers today. So hard to win a game.
No shit. How are you, Kyle?
I am good. I am super great. I'm getting ready to watch the game in 90 minutes. Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I think we're going to touch on that a little bit later on.
Sweet.
The, surprising Eastern Conference Finals, showing that we three idiots don't know anything about sports.
At least basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler, he just doesn't get enough credit. You know, through the media and through everyone.
I think when we talk about it later, we will I want to talk about the fact that he, not just him, but it seems to be and Matt and I kind of touched on this in a discussion over the weekend off the pod, you know.
Uh-huh.
It seems that NBA players don't play, which makes sense. They don't play nearly as hard during the regular season as they do in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
And I think Jimmy Butler is a really good case for that, because he turns it on when the playoffs start, and he's been amazing.
So, Eric Spoelstra, at this point, just curious on your two's opinion, is he bulletproof now in his role as head coach on the level with, like, Steve Kerr, Pops, where if they just completely shit the bed for the next 2-3 seasons, end up with high lottery picks, is he still safe?
I think so. I think as long as Pat Riley is there, Eric Spoelstra is going to be there no matter what happens. I think he's too good of a coach I don't think they would go through that kind of stretch unless something just terrible happens. But he's got the track record that I don't think the Miami Heat would be foolish enough to let him go if they had a couple bad seasons. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I think he'll be the coach as long as he wants to be the coach there. Maybe with or without even Riley. And again, I think I mentioned in a previous video he's never been coach of the year.
That's nuts. So,
yeah.
And he's all about the team accolades.
Just like us. So, Eastern Conference Finals, we got two games in the books. The Heat are up 2-0 as of this podcast recording. Who do you guys think is going to take the series? Do you think Miami can close it out, or do you think Boston's going to come back in Miami for Game 3 and Game 4?
Miami closes it out. I think Boston wins one down here in Miami, and unfortunately Miami's going to have to go back up north to Boston to clinch it, but I think Miami's going to get it. Jason Tatum just hasn't shown up consistently for them to do it.
Especially in the fourth quarter. I get that, but at the same time, over the course of the season, Boston demonstrated themselves to be the superior team. And they are still very, very, very much in this series. You know, my thoughts as things stand right now, I'm going to go with Boston in six. I think they can take 4 out of 5 from Miami, regardless of where it's at. And I think that starts tonight in game 3.
I saw your bets, so I saw you were going all Boston. So
I do think they bounce back tonight. I don't know if they win in six. They'd have to win 4 straight to do that. And I know winning 4 straight is not uncommon during the regular season, but for some reason in the playoffs, I know you say you think, Matt, you think they can take 4 out of 5, but that's a tall order with the way that the Heat have been playing.
Spoelstra gives them the advantage from the bench, and that's not anything that anyone can deny. But at the end of the day, it's up to the players who are on that court to execute their offense, to play good defense, to limit their turnovers, to make their shots, to find the open man. And I have the confidence that the Boston can do that at a much better rate than Miami here over the next few games. And they can play a lot better than they've shown so far. But Kyle, you're right. Like, Tatum has to do something. This is where they need him. They need him to be the man. They need him to be the man in the fourth quarter. And so far, he has not done that.
Yeah, and they need a second guy to do it, Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart or somebody to have a huge game in tandem with Tatum. So,
yeah, and Al Horford needs to play better. They need the Al Horford from the Philly series, the one that was playing lockdown defense and scoring 15 points a game. He just doesn't seem to be quite as on track, and I'm sure a lot of that has to do with Spoelstra's coaching.
Sure. Plus, Mans is getting old. He ain't no spring chicken.
That's true.
So you guys both think that Miami is going to shake the series?
Yes, sir.
I do now. Yeah, I think winning 4 out of 5 with the way that the Heat are playing is too tall of an order for Boston. We got to talk about the West. Don't really need to say much, just that the Lakers are getting stomped. Jamal Murray is looking like a stud.
On yes. DraftKings Sportsbook right now, Miami is -170 to win the series.
Really?
Just an interesting tidbit.
That is an interesting tidbit, Matt.
And a great segue to move on to our next topic today, gambling. Something all three of us enjoy doing, and two of us are actually halfway decent at it. We'll let everybody out there try and figure out who is the one who may struggle a bit from time to time.
I have my wins.
All right, or he can just identify himself. Way to ruin the suspense for everyone.
It's all right.
I haven't been doing well lately, though. It's been rough.
See,
I won last night.
You need to hit on, you know, the big bets like the margin parlays where you can just, you know, bring in 45-1 at once. Then you don't have to win as long. It's less pressure.
Yeah. Because Matt has done it once and he feels like he's just the sports gambling god now.
Oh, absolutely not. I never said or implied that. I simply shared my strategy, which I would not advise anyone to follow.
No. This guy had to call me when that game was closing out in a panic.
Wasn't in a panic. I was sweating, motherfucker.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
For future Super Bowl finalists, no AFC South team has reached the Super Bowl since when, Ramey?
Oh, that would be 2011 with the Colts.
Your 2009 Colts.
Oh, well, nine. Numbers yes. are hard.
Call yourself a fan. Yeah. The no
Hank
NFC
basket game.
Yeah, what's that?
The Hank basket game.
Right. Yes, the Hank. That's right. No NFC North team has reached the Super Bowl since the 2010 Packers. So what I'm saying here is Lions, Colts, Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, it's more likely for the Detroit to get there than the Colts, but it could happen. It's +80,000 on DraftKings. You want to roll with it?
I'd put a dollar
on it.
Sure.
Absolutely.
$8,000. That ain't bad.
Yeah. I just thought that was kind of interesting. And then 9 out of the last 12 Super Bowls, there's either been an AFC West or NFC West team appearing. So those divisions are you know, dominating.
Well, I mean, the Chiefs being in the AFC West helps, since it seems like
Chiefs
new.
And Seattle Chiefs. And LA yeah. and San Fran and
yeah,
Denver a year, Denver a yeah. couple year, you know,
seems like it's much more well distributed amongst the NFC West teams, but the AFC West kind of been dominated by the Chiefs, and I think will continue to do so. Although that is the tough division with the Chargers and the Raiders, but the Broncos should be getting better with Sean Payton.
I think the Broncos are a wild card. I'm not a Russ guy by any stretch, but Sean Payton brings something that really is only matched by Andy Reid in Kansas City, and that is very, very elite level coaching, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
I agree with that. So I know we've still got what, 4 months until 3.5 months until football starts, but anything to whet the appetite on football and future bets are fun. So you feel like a genius when you place them, and then, you know, 2 weeks into the season, you realize what an idiot you are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about realize. It's a certainty for me.
I enjoy them, but like I guess the shitty part is just having your money tied up for so long. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we gamble because we want the instant validation. You know, we want that dopamine hit from the win. We don't want to place a bet in May and then have to wait until the following February for it to pay it out or not.
And conversely, you know, there's other people that enjoy having a long bet like that, holding on to that, having that going, okay, man, I'm going to win. You know, I bet one for Dan Campbell, Coach of the Year, this afternoon.
Nice.
At plus 800, 8 something.
Isn't he the favorite?
Yeah, he's the favorite, but I still said, well, plus 800, I'll do it.
MCDC.
Yeah.
Motor City Dan Campbell.
He the man.
We'll have to get him on air sometime.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
See if he can find time in his schedule. I'm guessing he's busy.
You might be.
But online sports gambling's huge. In the last 6 years of regulated operations, like outside of Vegas or Nevada, they've had over $17 billion in revenue combined.
It's a lot of money.
It's crazy.
From $200 billion in wagers in the last 6 years.
It's very bad as mine.
Right. It's just growing in popularity as more states come on, and the biggest months are ahead of us because the big states like California, Texas, and Florida, they don't have it yet.
It's kind of shocking that Indiana has it. I mean, I know that the revenue and the tax money from it is huge, and that's probably why, but as conservative in the state as Indiana is, it's kind of wild that they were one of the first states to get it.
Yeah, 2019. So there was a ruling in May of 2018. It was a Supreme Court case, Murray versus NCAA, that repealed Pass Club. It is the hell is it? Oh, Professional Amateur Sports Protection Act. Basically, the Supreme Court said that violated the 10th Amendment. It was basically a federal overreach hour, and it kicked everything down to the individual states. After that ruling, there were something like 8 states in 2018 that said, all right, we're going to legalize this. And it just went from there. I think right now it's legal in one form or another in 32 states. But, you know, math is also difficult for me, so feel free to fact check me on that. The point being, it's blown up, and it's only going to continue to do so.
It's kind of wild how much not just the NFL, but all sports leagues have embraced it now that it's gone nationwide, not just limited to Vegas. It used to be this taboo thing that even like on ESPN and things like that, they had to tiptoe around when they talk about the line, or a broadcaster during a game would make a backhanded remark about the line being impacted if a certain score happened late in the game or something like that. So, and it's now at the point where there's a daily gambling show on ESPN. There's daily gambling podcasts all over the place. NFL Network, MLB Network, they've embraced it because they know they can make money off of it.
Absolutely. I remember back in the day, you'd hear whispers of teams wanting to relocate, and eventually Las Vegas would come up and everyone's like, oh no, you can't go there because gambling. Even though that shit was already going on, just the leagues at that time hadn't figured out a way to monetize that for themselves.
Yeah, and now Vegas is the city that everybody wants to go to. I mean, the Raiders relocated it a couple of years ago. The A's look to be moving there.
I hope the citizens of Vegas don't get dipped over having to foot the bill for a new stadium there. I saw they were, a couple hundred million apart, something like that. Which is
400, I think it was 400 million apart.
Yeah. Piss on that.
But yeah. Yeah. No. And I mean, and teams have got the Golden Knights have been successful there. So, you know, it's a good area to have a franchise in.
Well, you can usually get a direct flight there, so it's good for visiting teams too, visiting fans, not visiting teams. I mean, I know from Indy, there's a direct flight in Vegas, I think just about every day. So even when you want to go see your team play in Vegas and spend a long weekend or something, it's a great city to, and there's a lot to do other than just going to the game.
Oh, for sure. It's a great destination city for an away game because you can go make a weekend of it, come back. And if you've done it right, you have thoroughly enjoyed yourself.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, the Lions play the Raiders at home.
As long as they get the dub, I don't give a shit where they play the game.
Amen, brother. So future bets, what's a couple of you guys like and a couple that you dislike? Ramey?
Yeah, there's two I like. Just I really kind of stuck to team over-unders. I know we've got it all summer, so I'm sure we can get into this deeper if we want to. I like the Rams over 6.5 wins. I think with Stafford back and McVay showing that he's committed to coaching for the long term, or at least the short term, I guess, the next few years, I think they're gonna bounce back from last year and have at least 7 wins. Another one is the Steelers over 8.5 wins. Mike Tomlin does not have losing seasons, so I think they'll at least get to 9 wins.
Those ain't bad, man. Those ain't bad. For me, for a couple futures that I like, I took the Lions to win the NFC Central at plus 170. They are the favorite. I opted for that versus their win prop. Their win prop is at 9.5. I don't know. I think they're going to be a good team. I think they're going to win the division, but I think, you know, they're going to come in anywhere between like 9 and 11 wins. And so I'm just going to stay away from that. The second one I like is Bijan Robinson plus 1400 to lead the league in rushing. He's a bad man going to a team that's led by Arthur Smith. As long as he's there, they're going to run the ball. They're going to run it a lot and they're going to run it damn well. We've seen rookie running backs come in and make an impact from Zeke to Saquon Barkley. There's no reason Bijan can't do the same. A couple I don't like, the Chiefs to win their division at minus 165. It's not that I don't think the Chiefs are going to win the division. It's just there's not enough juice to justify the squeeze there at minus 165. I don't want to tie up $165 just to win $100 back. And then the second, the Colts over 6.5 wins at minus 135. I don't see the Colts as a 7-win team. I think they're somewhere a 5 or 6 win team. That just makes no sense to me at all.
You took my two that I don't like, Matt. I took the Lions over under and the Colts over under. So I mean, you laid it out perfectly. So I'll sit back and hear what Kyle has.
Yeah, we'll hang up and listen.
A couple I like is Lamar Jackson over 6.5 rushing touchdowns this year. It's plus 140. He got his deal. He can get back to being 18-19. I still he again he's not a great throwing quarterback, so I liked it over plus 140. And a crazy one I like is for a Super Bowl finalist, Lions Chiefs plus 4,500. If you want to get crazy, maybe use a free bet.
No shit. So we get a Super Bowl preview for the opening game that Thursday night.
No kidding. Yeah. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Dude, Lions are plus 6 or Lions are getting 6.5 in that game at even money. So yeah, I think they can hang within a touchdown on the Chiefs. I don't give a shit if it's opening night or not.
Be a lot of points in that game.
Oh God.
Totals at 53, I think.
Oh, wow.
I think it might go.
Yeah.
But A couple I don't like is the Bills as the AFC East winner at plus 115. I think the Jets are going to get it at plus 280 with their offseason additions and Josh Allen's inability to keep shooting himself in the foot at the end of games. I think the Jets will win.
He turns the ball over so damn much. He turns the ball over more than somebody at his talent and experience level should.
He runs way too much too. I mean, he was the leading rusher for them last year. That you can't sustain that. That they're going to have to.
I mean, Devin Singletary, come on, like
yeah.
You know, James Cook, the rookie, and who else? They did sign Damian Harris from New England, so yeah. We'll see how that works out.
And offensive rookie of the year, the favorite's Bijan at plus 250. And he probably will end up with it, but I went with Jackson Smith and Jigba plus 800 in Seattle. That offense was explosive last year. Geno Smith had over 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, I think 10 or 11 picks. And they need a third receiver there. You know, that I think Noah Fant was number three in receiving yards last year. So I think he's going to have one of those Jamar Chase type seasons and get that award.
There ain't no way in hell. I have no idea what the fuck you are smoking, but send some to me, brother. There are not enough targets to go around for him to make that kind of an impact. I'm thinking maybe 750 yards from him, six or seven touchdowns. DK and Lockett are going to command too much of the ball, and Geno Smith faded down the stretch last year. I think last year was his career year, and not bad. I'm not repeating.
That's just like your opinion, man.
Damn straight it is.
Yeah, I don't. If Bijan has the year that we think he will, I don't think Jackson Smith and Jigba will sniff offensive rookie of the year. And to your point, Matt. With Lockett and
DK
Metcalf. Thank you. I had DJ in my head. I don't know. I think Seattle takes a step back this year and they're looking for a quarterback in the draft next year.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, something that I guess I should have laid out in my original argument. I went first and said Bijan was winning the rushing title, and if he does that, he'll get rookie of the year. So through the transitive property, that already invalidates your bet. So. I hate how, like, on here, this is just like a fucking swinging dick. Like, it won't stay. All right, and now it's time for our back-in-the-day replay. Kyle, where are you taking us today?
A baseball man named Babe Ruth. So not to be confused with some lady named Baby Ruth, my back in the day replay is about the Sultan of SWAT, the King of Crash, the Colossus of Clout, the Great Bambino. On May 25th, 1935, Babe Ruth hit his 714th last home run of his career while playing for the Boston Braves. He retired a month later because his swing was dead as a doornail, Smalls.
Nice. Ramey?
Anybody get the Sandlot reference?
I was really, no.
Couple Sandlot references in there. Nobody likes the Sandlot. Anyway, go ahead.
I was really hoping for some more bombing raid history.
Yeah.
On this date in history.
That'll be next week. That'll
the
be
26th week. Consecutive bombing run.
I'm a World War II history guy, so you're going to hear a lot of it.
This week in 1996, Ken Griffey Jr. became the eighth youngest player in Major League history to hit his 200th home run. I was a big Ken Griffey Jr. baseball fan when I was growing up on the Super Nintendo.
Did you have a poster of him on your bedroom wall or
on my ceiling, actually?
Nice. It's funny how, you know, he came up when he did, but there was never really any steroid suspicion with him.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's, and don't get me wrong, I'm not in any way saying that I think he did, but I wonder if that's a byproduct of his, we'll call it positive relationship with the media, where some other players who weren't exactly as well liked suffered a little bit more.
It's a really good point. I think also because he just seemed to, when especially when he went to Cincinnati, he just couldn't get shake the injury bug. And I don't know if that had a lot to do with it, but he's one of those what ifs. Like if he had remained healthy during his stint with the Reds, like would he have hit 800 home runs?
Yeah, I don't know. He's probably in the top three of baseball players I've ever seen, and I would say he's probably not third.
Yeah, he was amazing, especially when he was young.
For sure. For my back-in-the-day replay pick, on May 24th, 1935, the first night game in Major League Baseball history was played at Cincinnati's Crosley Field. The home team defeated the Phillies 2-1. And it wasn't for another 53 years before a night game would be played at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was, what, 1988 before they played a night game there?
Yeah, and it was there was a rain. It actually got rained out, so they were supposed to play on the night one night, and it got rained out, and they ended up playing it the next night. So the first night game at Wrigley Field was actually a rain out, which I mean, complete sense for the Cubs.
And this week's pick sixer for the Sona. The fuck. For this week's six picker, I give up.
And now it's time for the Stoned On Sports Podcast Pick Sixer this week. We are going to be talking about our top six favorite sports memories. Matt, would you like to start us off?
Oh, I suppose I could do that for you. For me, number six, October 15th, 2003, Wrigley Field. Bartman game doesn't really need a whole lot more explanation than that. Ramey, I'm sure that's a favorite of yours. In Chicago, Cubs fans were butthurt for, you know, another 15 years afterwards. Number five, August 4th, 1993, Robin Ventura charges the mound against 87-year-old Nolan Ryan, promptly gets put in a headlock and gets beaten down. Some great photographs of that I've seen out there. There's even a few that I've seen signed by both people. Number four, January 20th, 2002, the Tuck Rule game. I remember being at a place called White's in Montrose, Michigan, watching that game with a few of the fellas, and there was some debauchery afterwards. But just seeing that happen live in the environment was a lot of fun.
I'm there for that.
Yes, you were. Number three, April 3rd, 1989, Vermeil Robinson sinks two free throws with 3 seconds left in overtime against Seton Hall, giving Michigan an NCAA basketball championship. They won the game 82-79. That team was coached by Steve Fitter, who took over just before the tournament and was the architect of the Fab Five. Number two, October 14th, 2006, Maglio Ordóñez walked off the Oakland A's in game four of the ALDS. I remember I was there watching that game with Dale at the Stabbing Cabin when it happened. What an amazing moment. Tigers went on to lose in the World Series that year because they forgot how to field the ball. And number one for me, September 29th, 2002, Ernie Harwell's final broadcast. The man was the voice of my childhood, and it truly was an end of an era. Kyle, what do you got?
I didn't put mine in any particular order. December 4, 2021, Michigan wins the Big Ten championship in football. I was there. Best live game I've ever been to. Thanks again, Matt.
I was there, too.
Yeah. May 24, 2004, Detroit Pistons Tayshaun Prince has a chase down block on Reggie Miller in game two of the Eastern Conference Finals. Detroit had 19 blocks as a team that game. They went on to win the NBA Finals in a blowout against the Lakers.
Five game sweep.
Yep. March 19th, 1995. I think all I have to say for that is I'm back. Michael Jordan unretires from the NBA.
So I have a question for you, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I've heard a wild conspiracy theory that the reason Michael Jordan retired from the NBA was due to some gambling debts that he had. And
made a backdoor deal with David Stern. And yada, yada, yada.
Do you believe that to be true?
No.
Fair enough. You heard it here, folks. Didn't happen that way.
September 11th, 2010. That is the game that Denard Robinson went off against Notre Dame in a comeback win, 28-24. Denard was a slippery magician that day. He had 502 total yards. Unfortunately, Michigan went 7-6 that season, but it did end Rich Rod era.
Was that the night game?
I believe so. September 25th, 1994, my favorite NFL running back, Barry Sanders, against the Patriots, has a 40-yard touchdown run and just completely 360s the safety. I think it was Harlan somebody. I can't remember the safety's name, but just totally turned him into a 360 on this run. He juked him and spun. One of the greatest runs. My favorite Barry run.
Circle button. That's it.
And I guess you could say my favorite. I get excited every time I see a clip of it or an article about it. March 26, 1997, the Colorado Avalanche come to the Detroit Red Wings, and otherwise known as Fight at the Joe. It was a huge brawl in revenge for Claude Lemieux's hit on Chris Draper the previous season. The game finished with 18 fighting majors and over 144 penalty minutes. My favorite hockey game.
It's on the Avalanche.
How about you, Ramey? What you have for your pick sixer this week?
So, yeah, I find it interesting that a couple of your guys' favorite sports moments were at the expense of some of my teams. So that's just wonderful. I think I might get Matt back here in a couple minutes. So my number six is actually the culmination of two moments. Butler basketball going back-to-back in NCAA championship games. It was just a really cool moment. And that was in 2010 and 2011. Seeing them seemingly come from nowhere. They had a really good team that had kind of come up together. And Gordon Hayward, Sheldon Mack ended up being in the pros. Gordon Hayward's still in the pros. But going to the championship games back-to-back years is pretty remarkable for such a small school. My number five was the January 21st, 2007, Colts beating the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. Peyton Manning is one of my sports heroes, and it seems that every time he played the Patriots had his number, especially in the playoffs. And this was a game that finally they broke through and got to the Super Bowl, which is one of my other sports favorite sports memories. So that's my number five.
Was that the Rashe Caldwell game?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was, oh my God. When he kept dropping those passes and the camera would zoom in on him real close and his eyes were the size of the dinner plates.
Uh-huh. Yep. My number four, IU basketball, the watch shot, IU against number one Kentucky. IU had been just complete dog shit for about 5 or 6 years because of the sanctions that were placed on them during the Kelvin Sampson era. Tom Crean comes in and cleans it up, but basically has to start from scratch. It was kind of the moment where IU was quote unquote back. I know that didn't lead to any kind of title or anything, but at least they were nationally relevant again. And it's always good when Kentucky and John Calipari get beat. So that's my number four. My number three, again, IU basketball, when April 1st, 2002, the NCAA championship game against Maryland. Yes, it wasn't a win, but during my lifetime and my ability to remember things, that was the highlight of a great NCAA tournament run. It was a couple of years after Bob Knight had been fired. And the team kind of gelled and made a run in March, beating Duke, the number one overall seed, before ultimately losing to Maryland in the championship game. So IU did win the tournament in 87, but I was 3 years old and I do not remember that. So I'm not counting that as my top six sports memories. Number two, February 4th, 2007, the Colts win the Super Bowl against the Chicago Bears down in Miami. Not a particularly great game. A lot of Colts fans actually think that beating the Patriots was the bigger deal, but I disagree. Super Bowl is definitely the number one for me. So, but it's my number two sports memory. And my
Those
number
Colts
one
fans would be idiots. The Super Bowl is always the biggest one.
Yes. But it's always good when Tom Brady gets beat.
Hang on.
My number one is,
words.
Yeah. My number one is took place November 2nd, 2016 in extra innings of Game 7 of the World Series. Chicago Cubs beating the Cleveland Indians 4-3. There was a rain delay in that game too, so it was just one of those that just wouldn't get to the end, but once it did, it was really my favorite sports memory, just because of the Cubs kind of being my first sports team that I followed. And my grandpa and I would watch Cubs games on WGN back when you could actually watch them on TV. We would go out in the afternoon because they were always playing during the day. So we would watch them, and it was just a really cool moment. And it was just 108 years in the making.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. We appreciate you all stopping by to watch. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, rate, and review. Thanks again, everybody, and we will see you next week. Ramey, Kyle, you got anything to add?
Yeah, real quick, I just want to let you know our official website is up at stonedonsportspodcast.com. Check it out. All our links for all your hosting or all your streaming platforms and podcast platforms are available on there. Give it a look.
Take it home, Ramey.
Thanks for listening, watching. Hope to talk to you again soon. Everybody have a great week, and we will see you again next week.